Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning into the podcast. I just want to take a moment to mention the podcast sponsor, retrogamestore.com.au. Head over there for all your Game Boy refurbish and repair needs. Screens, shells, buttons, all the bits and pieces. And there's a complete custom build made to order service as well. Also, plenty more retro gaming goodness like video cables, display stand and power supplies, controllers, etc. And you can add the code PixelPie at checkout to get 10% off your order. Also, take a moment to say if you enjoyed this episode and haven't already, give it a subscribe or follow and a review where you can. And maybe you want to recommend the Pixel Pie podcast to anyone you know that would enjoy it. That'd be really appreciated. So thanks for listening. And now let's get on with the show.
Hey, everybody, it's Sean from Handheld Obsession, and you're listening to the Pixel Pie podcast.
Hello, Sean. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
I am good, man. I am good. It's for me here in Brisbane, Australia, it's Sunday morning around about 7:30 a.m. I have plans for the day. So get this nice and early and have a great chat, meet a good person, and then go and hang out with my wife all day, which is really good because my daughter's going away to stay with her friend for the day. So, yes. And for you, it's like a sort of Saturday evening around 5:30-ish, right?
Got about 5:30 Saturday evening, so yeah, just finishing up my day of work.
Are you work Saturdays?
Well, no, it was work for general housework.
Oh yeah,
not work I get paid for.
Well, not in money anyway.
Exactly,
there's rewards.
Yes,
and whereabouts are you, Sean? Now, sorry, before I do, so you've got Instagram and YouTube as Handheld Obsession.
Yes.
And yes, it's very handheld driven, but there's also, I mean, I think most people that are into kind of handheld gaming, there's more to it than that. Everybody's had like a Super Nintendo or a Game Boy or, an Amiga when they were kind of cacking away at code and stuff. So there's obviously going to be more to Sean than Handheld Obsession, but yeah, we'll get into that. So whereabouts are you, Sean?
I am in Virginia Beach, Virginia, which is about middle of the East Coast of the U.S.
Okay. Sounds nice. Sounds nice.
Yes. It is nice.
Do you, are you susceptible to like cyclones or what do you got up there? Tornadoes?
Hurricanes.
That's right.
Yeah. Actually, there's a pretty bad hurricane going through New Orleans tomorrow. We'll get the tail end of it as it goes by, but generally Virginia Beach doesn't get them that much.
Right. And so, is that sort of where you've always, like, did you grow up Virginia Beach and stuff?
I wasn't born in Virginia Beach, but I grew up in Virginia Beach and then moved away for quite a while. And now I've, in the last few years, moved back. So
Nice. It's interesting to come back somewhere and sort of see all the all the apartments and, malls are gone.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird because I have a different perspective of it coming back this time from when I was here before. So it's a nice change.
Oh, that's good. So let's talk about, I guess, retro gaming in essence then. Now there's a bunch of other stuff, like up on your shelf behind you is a sort of like a diecast aircraft up on a little stand there, and I asked you and you're like, my previous occupation was a pilot, and I'm like, oh, we have so much to talk about. I pointed to the reasonably large scale F-14 Tomcat I've got up on my shelf. I started building that when Top Gun 2 was announced. You and I are about the same vintage. And as people have been saying, 30 something years we've been waiting for this, November 19th. So I'd like to talk to you about that, but we might sort of do a bit of retro game talking. So what's your kind of like your history in general? Did you sort of grow up with consoles and Game Boys and all that sort of stuff?
So I grew up with, I never had a console growing up, but all my friends had consoles. So I was kind of always involved with their consoles.
It's cheaper that way. There.
Well, yeah, it's much better to just go over to your friends and, use their video games.
Yeah.
But my parents always got me computers. So I always had computers. I had Commodores, Tandys. And so for me, I did a lot of my gaming at other people's houses. I never really did it much. at my own house. So, you know, that's kind of where I got to start. My first handheld that I ever had was a Sega Game Gear.
Mm. Oh, wow. And
yeah. And I played that for years, loved it. You know, it's still had kind of something close to my heart. I mean, I would say Instagram is probably, and all of retro gaming is about 90% Nintendo, it feels like.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, it's, yes, the Game Gear is not as good as some of the Nintendo offerings, but it's still, it's got a really, it's close to my heart. Always going to be my first handheld.
Do you still have your original Game Gear?
I do not. Oh, I actually don't know what happened to it.
I know that's
one of those things. Yeah. I think I may have sold it, but I honestly, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely, it was a different time then when you hit the end of life for a console like that, you just kind of got rid of it.
Yeah. I mean, as I'm sort of talking and, you know, leading up to this, I sort of flick through your Instagram, gets a good idea of what you're up to. I mean, you know, right here, I'm looking at, you know, you've got a TurboGrafx 16, like the handheld version. And then you've also got like an Evercade with what the full collection of games. So you're very adventurous. And I do see that quite often you'll put up, you know, things like, I think it was recently, what was that year? There just seems to be this plethora of these kind of handheld Android devices, the One X player, you know, and the next to that is a PSP, you know, or a Vita or something. So it's like, you're really kind of just getting in amongst it all.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely just live in the Nintendo world, but there's all these other handhelds have so much to offer. Yeah. There's some that don't. I mean, that I've definitely got some devices that for me have got to be some of the worst handhelds ever made.
Right.
But I have them.
Name names.
The game.com.
Right. Is it a recent sort of last decade sort of thing?
That was, it came out around 2000.
Right.
It is hands down a disaster of a console.
Right.
It's got a frame rate of about what looks like 10 frames per second when you're playing it. Mm-hmm. It's not backlit. It's black and white.
Mm.
It's just, and I have multiple units of them. I have almost every game of them.
Wow.
It's kind of a, I don't know. I have a little bit of an addiction with the game.com and I don't know why.
It's something. It's like, it's almost like some of those movies are just so terrible, but you go back. It's almost comfort of just knowing, hey, I've got you and you're terrible, but I got you. It's all good.
You can't believe these companies
put
as much money as they did to come up with this device that is just, it's awful in every way.
Yeah. Are you gonna get in on that? What's the one with the crank that's coming out soon?
Oh yeah, I am in on that. I'm all in on the play date.
Yeah, yeah. It's even the name kind of freaks me out just a teeny tiny bit. Even like the play date's like something I take my daughter to play with another child. So I'm like, I don't know. It's weird. And the crank handle. I understand there's going to be, you know, games around it, but it just smacks of so gimmicky. But then I listen to a few podcasts of people that I respect, and they're like, this is going to be great. I'm like, I'm going to have to believe them, I guess.
It's got a lot of really great ideas behind how they want to do where you're buying the device. Everyone looks at the price and is like, oh, it's $179. It's too much money, but it includes, you know, a lot of games that they're just going to automatically every week or so, you're going to get another game. So it's going to kind of be like every time you pick it up, it's a different feeling, and you'll also be able to sideload games,
right,
which is nice. And there is a huge community already of people making games for it.
The play date.
Yeah. And let me tell you something, that is a really polarizing device. There's people that, I'll do posts. If you go through some of my posts, people are just, they get angry about it. I had a guy on my YouTube channel. I did some of reasons why I'm excited for it.
Yeah.
He said, I'm going to unsubscribe from everybody who posts about this device.
Oh, wow.
Like, okay.
I don't know why it. Maybe he had a bad play date when he was growing up.
Maybe. I don't know. It's, you know, they get mad about the crank. They call it gimmicky, and I can understand why.
I mean, that's just a word. Just a word I use as a descriptor as opposed to a criticism. But I guess for me, it really taps into we're in the real indie generation of gaming. Like, even to go, I have a PS4. And it's probably as high as I'm willing to go. I have a PS3 and PS4. And even when you kind of go and look on the PS shop for PS4, there's indie games. And I don't really, and I'm sure there's some marketing tricks there, and they kind of like, they really do own their asses. Like, an indie game to me is, like, I had Adam Isma on recently, and, you know, the game Deadius, for the Game Boy. And that's a game that he thought up, he coded, he did everything, he worked with distributors. It was him and a little help from his mate. Now, that is the definition of indie. Independent game production. And I can't help but feel that whenever a game turns up on the PlayStation shop, yes, it's probably indie because it's not one of the big AAA developers, but at the same time, there's a small part of the soul that may have been part of the transaction. And but this play day really taps into that indie thing. It's not for the Switch, it's not for some other Android thing. It's indie, and I think that's really cool, and that makes people think, hey, the world's still hungry for different. We love Nintendo, but we also want some meat with our veg kind of thing, you know, we want dessert.
And I think too, with that, those indie games, you still have to have a publisher to get onto you know, the PlayStation Store or the Nintendo
eShop. It's like a gatekeeper of some sort,
right? You still have to do that, where I think some of the things that's overlooked with the Playdate is the ability to sideload a game that someone made by themselves. And they're even going to supply free of charge all these tools, like even if you don't know how to code.
Yeah.
Like they have one for, even if you don't know how to code, that you could make games. And like Spacebot Interactive that did Dragonborn. I did some of the testing on that for him.
Oh, wow.
And it was great to see that as he made that journey and was tweaking and working on that. But he made that with those tools for people who don't know how to code. Can't think of the name of the GB Studio.
Yeah.
So, and something like that, that's a true indie. There's no publisher involved. For sure. It's just... So that's what I like. You like the indies. I like to see that type of focus coming out where you're getting someone who made it because they love it.
Yeah.
And then that's in the,
And hardware is such a commitment. I listened to a podcast recently about the Segway, you know, the thing you stand up with the wheels and backwards and forwards, and hilarious, you know, YouTube compilations of people eating shit on Segways. and it was like, I can't remember the names and stuff and the exact time period, but the guy that created it sort of had this thing, and he's like, I've got this thing, we're going to make it, created this whole like engineering kind of lab, and they were making it, and they got a guy in to start writing like a book about it, and they were reporting on it, but no one could tell anybody what it was. And people had seen prototypes, which looked janky, but he's like, here's the date. It's going to be amazing. It's going to change the world. It's going to change the world. And then when they released it, the hype bar was so high because people were like, this is going to be a hovercraft. It's going to be a flying car. It's going to be teleportation. Yeah. It's going to be all this stuff. And when it kind of came out, you know, they were all like, is that it? Kind of thing.
They were like $5,000-$6,000.
Yeah, too, and that's right. And that was super expensive. And he kind of shot himself in the foot because he didn't want to get that whole, like, if I release any information, some company will rip it off and all this sort of stuff. So when you let people inside the development process, like with the play date, like, it's not out yet, but here's the dev kit, get ready to have a great time. The ball just gets so much more momentum. And that's amazing. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah, and the Evercade, I don't know if you saw their recent cartridge that came out. They had an Indie Heroes cartridge, and Deadius is on that.
Right.
So that's
that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, they're gonna help out. Let me see. Yeah, so they've got Dedus is on there.
Yeah.
And they got 14 games on their cartridge for their indie heroes. Neat. So that's, I mean, that's going to be another avenue for people to make for a game, because then they can emulate it onto whatever system. Evercade will just use the emulation for that system. So
Adam's story as a developer is like, his backstory is more like as a conceptual artist. But when he kind of punched it out, if you go to his website to get Dedius as a ROM, there's a little box that says pay as much as you want.
Yeah.
And that's just, you can instantly tell that's a project of passion, as opposed to, how can I become one of the elite with my A and a half game sort of thing, or whatever, you know, that it might end up being.
I had a friend of mine. Back when I was living in Vegas, we had a small arcade.
Right.
And we had everything on free play.
Right.
And we said, pay whatever you want.
Right.
If you come in and you don't have, and this was during the downtime in the economy too. It's like, if you come in, you don't have money, play whatever you want, as long as you want, pay whatever you feel it's worth.
Right.
And you know, people paid whatever, but we're trying to let people experience it. We had a lot of 80s arcade games, a lot of pinball machines
wicked,
you know, weren't available. And it's not like we're trying to screw people out of a lot of money to play them.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
we want the experience.
Well, there must have been a pretty challenging business model, like to keep the lights on. Was this like a passion project? Were you guys kind of funding it from other kind of like incomes, or was
so it
kind of float itself a bit?
It was a passion project where we also had people that would buy machines. So we would constantly have rotating machines in there, and we would make money off of getting ones, fixing them up, selling them.
Right.
So it was more than, people would have parties there that they would pay for.
Right. Yeah, cool.
Things like that. And we had leagues. This was also something that was a set amount to pay for. So those types of things paid for, but inevitably, you know, it wasn't enough to keep it afloat. So it kind of died off. But
yeah, it's funny, isn't it, that sometimes things are just hot and then they're sort of not. And I guess these days arcades we're very fortunate in Brisbane. We have a couple of sort of, I guess they're kind of called barcades, but in reality they're kind of like more like bars. We've got one in here in the Valley, Netherworld, and it's is very much, it's about gaming. If you took the games out, they'd probably say, we're done. We're not serving drinks. They've really committed to it. A lot of leagues, a lot of support, a lot of community support. We also have an arcade here in Brisbane called One Up, not to be confused with the 3/4 size cabs, different, not related. And I think he's got like 300 cabs there and pinballs. It's an arcade. You walk in and go, wow, I've just gone through like a time warp, except it's sort of like cross generations of games, you know.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah, I've been to quite a few of those around the US when I was flying around. And there's definitely some that are really committed to it. And then there's some where it feels like kind of an afterthought. But there's one that I used to go to all the time in Salem, Oregon, called the Coin Jam. And man, that place, if you could, to me, was the perfect bar. They had great food and they had great games.
Yeah.
And I'm dying to go back, but
yeah.
I'm going to be a while.
yeah. So you just mentioned flying around. And so I asked you before about the little aircraft up on your shelf there. So you used to like as a pilot, is that correct?
Yeah. So I was a pilot. I used to fly, started out flying, private aviation, charter, things like that. And then I moved over to flying airlines. The one that's in my room here is from a aircraft that I was captain on. And unfortunately, in 2019, I fell during a walk around of a plane, slipped on some ice, and injured my shoulder to the point where I can't be a pilot anymore because they can't fix it. Yeah. And it led to me starting to try and kill time to me starting handheld obsession.
Man, that's really awful. Yeah, I mean, that's probably what you love doing, and
it is
stupid ice.
Yeah,
I would have thought surely they could hook you up though. Like, don't you have a co-pilot? And you're like, you know what? Whenever that light flashes, you're gonna have to flick that switch. I can't reach over there.
Do you know it's one of those things where I could do it if nothing went wrong.
Right,
you could probably get away with it, but any kind of weight or things like that on the controls, and it would just wouldn't happen. But it's really taken a lot out of me from. Because it was my passion, and it wasn't just a job. It wasn't like I was working a regular 9-to-5 job. So it's been hard to deal with, but
I'm not sure how it works with you guys. I guess it's going to be similar, but like I used to know a guy who used to fly for like Virgin here in Australia, just domestically, and like for him it kept him really sharp because he was like that. He was testing like every 3 months. It was almost like he was resetting his. Kind of like his license every 3 months.
Yeah, you have to be.
It just kept him so sharp, and like as far as his physical fitness, So I don't think people quite realize that if you're you can't fly your plane anymore, you'll be right, and you've really got to. There's a little motor in there that's used to kind of like revving, and all of a sudden it's not required to rev, and you've got to kind of make that motor busy, I guess. Hey.
Yeah, you have to basically you're tested every 6 months. You have every 6 months, well, depending on your age, every 6 months you have to go for a medical evaluation. So I know a lot of people don't think it's as involved as it is because it's kind of like one of those things that you're behind that wall. They don't see everything you're doing. All they know is they're ticked off if their flight's delayed or they're
that's right.
happy if you get them in early.
That's right. Push back in the seat when you take off and rotate. And that's about all they experience, and a bit of a bumpy landing. Man, that's really sad. And I'm glad you kind of bounced back. I'm looking at you, you got a smile on your face and you seem fairly positive. And lots of people don't have the opportunity to kind of bounce back. Unfortunately. But handheld gaming and gaming in general, I guess, can be an occupation or a preoccupation from it. Now, so you've moved into like you said, when that happened, you went into the Instagram and YouTube. So has that been something that has like helped you out like in more ways? Like are you able to kind of make a little, and lots of people don't like to talk about, but like if there's income involved, we all want to be getting a little bit of coin for what we love doing. Are you able to make a bit of coin? Is it sort of more so about just keeping you busy and keeping you interested and keeping you young at heart?
It's been more about keeping me busy. I mean, there's, you can get free things, but unless you're in a
free things don't pay the bills.
Exactly. All it does is get your wife ticked off at you that you've got too much junk in the house.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
I've been told on many occasions, if we get one more package from China.
Oh my gosh.
So,
well, you just gotta, my wife's actually a bit of a shopper herself, not a big shopper, but we kind of get like waves where all of a sudden she'll get, three or four things. I'm like, see, it's not just me. She's like, one time. I'm like, one time a month. It's you kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, fairly even here. So, I mean, handheld obsession was obviously something that you went, I'm going to go down that specific path. And I guess what was your kind of goal when you sort of started it out? Was it just wanting to start Instagram and see if people enjoy my stuff and then into YouTube? I mean, the pinnacle of it for me is you're so brave that recently, when I say recent, last few months, you decided to play through every DMG game or at least give them a good crack.
Yeah.
That's brave and some other words I would use to describe.
Yeah. A little bit insane.
Yeah.
So, my initial intention was I had been doing some modding and this was, I mean, it's only a few years ago, but I think the first one I modded was in probably 2016. I was looking back through my orders. I think 2015 or something was my first one. And, it was a different world of modding Game Boys back then because it was a lot of actual, like really getting in and cutting things.
Sort of like backlit biverts and stuff. There wouldn't have been LCDs back then.
And one of my first ones was a backlit Byvert, and it didn't, this was before they made the chip for it. I mean, it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's so nice now. I mean, it's you know, beautiful. All the different between, you know, like Natalie, the nerd and her lights.
Yeah,
I had lit up my Play It Loud DMG. I found the picture of it the other day, but I had to individually glue LEDs and wire them all up into each spot. Now you just lay down and couple solder points and it's done. It's
amazing.
It's great. But it was something to keep me busy. And I just was kind of wanting to spread the love for retro gaming and handheld gaming and put out some pictures. And you know, I met a lot of people along the way, which has been great.
It is great, isn't it? You do meet people. Like I've put out like an episode a week for the last nearly 30 weeks, and it's 30 people I've met, and it really helps. That sort of stuff really helps to just help you remember that, you know, when you're stuck in traffic, I'm stuck in traffic. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And so have you always been like a collector, like even before you kind of, before you stopped flying? And because you said 2015, you did your mod, your first mod. And obviously 2018, 2019 was sort of when you had to sort of, you brought home sort of thing. Have you always been a collector of this sort of stuff? I mean, you've got a Vectrex over there behind you. Most people probably don't even know what a Vectrex is. And if you don't know, just go and Google it, because it's pretty crazy and rad and so rudimentary but effective. That was the beauty of the Vectrex.
Yeah, and it's, you know what's great about the Vectrex? Well, one thing about the Vectrex is it's, having owned a Vectrex, anytime I see the Vectrex in any kind of like retro arch or any kind of emulation system, it's not even the same. You cannot even understand what
doesn't get that sort of blur and stuff, and
it doesn't. Yeah. It's not bright enough. It's not the same thing.
Because it's a different screen, isn't it? It's not like a CRT. It's like there's a certain type of screen in there.
Yeah, it's the same screen like you get in original Asteroids. Tempest also used it.
Battlezone may have used it.
Yeah, Battlezone did. Yeah. And it's an absolute great machine. It's definitely my pride and joy. And it's handheld because you can pick it up and carry it around. You just have to have an extension cord.
Yeah, I know. It's like the GameCube has a handle on the back. And I'm like, okay, sure. You can see me just walking down the street, you know, like an ad with my game. I still need all the cables. I still need everything else, but it's got a handle.
So. But you can carry it.
So. You can carry it. That's really great. Yeah, right. The arcade stuff must have taught you a lot. Was this before or during? So it sounds like you've had a few kind of careers along the way.
Well, no, that was, I was still a pilot. But it was when I wasn't flying, I was helping with that.
Right.
So, and that, I think we started that the first one, and he kind of blames me for starting it because he ran his own kind of route where he had machines out everywhere. And then he had this one.
Like an operator.
Right. He had this retail space where he would work on machines, but it wasn't anywhere where you could walk in.
Right.
And I went over there one night and I said, "You've got all these machines. Why don't you make an arcade?"
Yeah, plug them in, get people in. Yeah.
So he always blames me as being the one who got it going. But
Yeah, right. Do you still collect any of the like, because you said you grew up on like computers as opposed to consoles, Amigas and Commodores and stuff?
Yeah, I do. One of my favorite ones that I have is Tandy 1000 HX.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You guys probably didn't have. Do you have Radio Shack in Australia?
No, we didn't have Radio Shack, but we did back in probably 80s, maybe early 90s. We did have Tandy.
Okay, so you did. I didn't know if they had the.
So Tandy, I'm not sure. I mean, Tandy used to be the place for like you could, you know, buy discrete components and all that sort of stuff, as well as like two-way radio kits. And we have a place over here now called JCar, which is about the closest thing. So if I want to buy a 36 ohm resistor I can go there and buy them. I have to buy 100, but I can buy them, you know, and all right. that sort of stuff. But they still have the 3D printers. So I imagine the Tandies were around. I guess what I saw most commonly, I was similar to you. I didn't have a lot of stuff. I had a Commodore 64, but friends would have things. You'd see like Spectrums and that sort of stuff. But I think the Tandy was probably more a US type thing. I'm definitely not an expert on personal computers through the 80s right. and 90s. I just think they're big and I couldn't really be bothered having. I wouldn't mind a Commodore 64, but there's people that collect them and it's like, wow, that's a lot of bigness.
Yeah, I've got the Tandy 1000 HX, which was one that I had. I threw mine away, just threw it in the trash. I don't remember, which is the humanity. Awful, but yeah, I know. And then I've got the Ultimate 64, which is there's a guy in Germany. He makes these boards.
Right.
And it's, you know, you can add in the chips for the sound.
Right
on it, but it's also that's the whole. It fits into a Commodore 64, and it's run with a FPGA.
Yeah,
and it's like you're using a Commodore 64. You turn it on, but you've got HDMI and you've got Ethernet on it, and flash drives, and so it kind of brings it into the future. And then I use the Mister for a lot of using. Older computers because they've got 20 or 30 Spectrums, you know, you name it, old Tandy color computers.
The Mist is a big deal. Hey, it's a big deal.
Yeah. So I mean, that's the Mister is kind of my go-to for a lot of things just because it's, I mean, you've got arcade, you've got older computers, you've got almost every console and handheld.
The Pi is still doing great things. The Pi 4 is doing great things, but I think the Mist is probably because the Pi things like you can pretty much buy a Pi 4, jump on YouTube and find all fighting games, you know, 300 gig ISO or whatever you call it for a Pi, and you put it on you just burn it to the SD card, put it in, and you're more or less doing it. There's no tinkering left. There's tweaking with like, you know, like, is it like run ahead and things to reduce lag and that, but I think the Mister has become that place that people go that lots of people can't because that takes a bit more thinking. There's a little bit of like, not elitism, but a little like, oh, you do Pi well. When you're a big boy, come and look at the Mister.
Yeah, when you want to do the actual hardware.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and FPGA is the thing. Like, I'm super surprised, to be honest. I'm not because it's Nintendo, but when someone releases like an FPGA sort of GBA board, like game over, we don't have to kill them anymore. They can all be saved and,
you know, but then there's still people that are going to say it's not as good.
And I
can tell you from playing, because I've got most every handheld that is on there.
Yeah.
That it is, there is not a noticeable difference at all. The Atari Lynx is one that I've played so many times, the California games on there.
Yeah.
The surfing one, that if you just play me the music from you, I can tell you if it's too fast or too slow.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and it's one of those, if you have that one game that you can tell, it's always a good test for any emulator for me, but on the Pi, on using RetroArch on my computer, I can tell a slight difference, but on the Mister, it seems like it's dead on. And you know, I mean, the one great thing about the Mister over the Pi is when you turn it on, it's instantly on. You don't have to wait for it to boot up.
Yeah.
You don't have to wait for it to load. It's just ready to go.
I've got one here still running in the back of my consoles purely for PC Engine. It's one of those consoles I'm really kind of keen on, and the prices are just starting to go up. And there's an EverDrive for the PC Engine, which is not cheap. It's sort of 200. The EverDrives for the Mega Drive and the Super Nintendo were like $450 or something. So that's still cheap. It was like, but about $300. But the PC Engine is just one of those, just never really got anywhere except Japan. And, you know, I think it was the TurboGrafx in the US, but again, there's a whole different catalog of games and everything. So
Yeah, that's probably the EverDrive. I have the EverDrive for that one, and it's probably the most expensive per number of games you can have on it.
Yeah.
Thing, you know? Yeah.
So do you have like the US version that only runs like the US ROMs, or do you have a way of multi-region?
No, I have mine's hacked so I can play. And also the EverDrive, you can switch between PC Engine and TurboGrafx.
Okay. So I might have to. So what you've got, like a US, like a TurboGrafx that's been hacked for multi-region.
The Turbo Express. Yeah.
Oh, that's the little guy you've got.
Yeah.
So that's your PC Engine, the Turbo Express.
Yeah. So and that's the same as the, I can't think of the name of what it was in the, well, the PC Engine GT, I think is
yeah,
what
they called yeah, it. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's so funky. Yeah,
it's the same device.
It looks like something out of like, you know, like the scanner out of Alien when they're like looking for the blips.
It's exactly that. It's got that same
yeah, it's so screen. Yeah. Heavy and almost like, it's almost like military sort of heftiness about it. And so is yours all original?
No, actually, mine has been modified. It's got the upgraded screen and has the RGB screen instead of the. So a lot of them you can upgrade with the screen that people use like off backup cameras or things like that, but it's still a composite signal, so it's not crisp. And that's the problem right now with. Like the upgrades for the Sega Nomad is it's only that composite signal. So it's, right. You can put in a better screen, but it's still not a crisp image that you'd be used to if you were using, you know, an emulation device.
Oh, just a habit though. It's kind of gnarly. And I see you've got an N-Gage.
Oh yes.
The Taco phone. Oh my God. The story behind that is amazing.
The first N-Gage and the second. I actually like the N-Gage QD, and it's really easy to hack because the games are just through the roof expensive.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You probably could have, you know, 10 years ago, you probably could have bought an N-Gage and all the games for $100.
Yeah.
Good luck getting some of the games for under $200. Wow. And if you get you can get an MMC card, put every single game ever made on it easily.
For those that aren't familiar, the N-Gage is like, it's sort of shaped like a taco, and you had to actually put it up to your head, but not like on the edge. So you look like you had like one Mickey Mouse ear. So the thing on the side of your head.
It spawned a whole website, sidetalking.com.
Oh, it's just ridiculous. It's a typical example of like Nokia just sort of saying, let's make a game thing, but it's still going to be a phone. Like in some ways, it was miles ahead. It was
if you think about it,
yeah,
everybody's got that right now.
Yeah, that's right.
You got a phone that plays games.
That's right. But they kind of went the other way. They're like a game console that can also be a phone. So they kind of, I think they mixed their signals a bit. They need to work that out. Like a little speaker on the front as well as the side could have just fixed all that. Would have been different. I mean, I know people are buying these for like $30 from like EB Games and stuff and things like that. But yeah, just crazy, crazy.
Yeah, they actually, I'm finishing up a YouTube video that I'm doing of my five worst consoles that I own. And that's the first version is one of them. And I mean, they made some for a company that was, I mean, they had almost 60% of the cell phone market.
Yeah.
Nokia was the giant, and they designed this so poorly where you had to have it up to your side. Then they had
terrible frame rate and.
Yeah. And to replace the game, you had to take out the battery.
Yeah. Open the whole thing up basically. Yeah.
I mean, they fixed it all when they did the second version of it, but it was too late. I mean, they'd lost it.
It was already stupid.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah. And I see there's a picture on next day. You've got a bunch of Wonder Swans as well. They always amaze me, the Wonder Swans. Let's, you know, it's Gunpire kind of went off and did another thing. So it's, I don't know whether it's just a fanboy thing or what, but even before I knew it was a Gunpire thing, I was like, it's just something really unique and odd about that. And it works in portrait and landscape. And wow, someone was thinking well outside the box.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, that is also one of my, I consider my worst consoles.
Right.
The WonderSwan. And I don't speak Japanese, so that eliminates
right
a all lot games. Of the games that are
yeah,
in there.
Yeah,
there's,
yeah.
There's a list going around, and there's some decent games that you can play if you don't speak Japanese.
Yeah.
But it's still, those games are also available on other systems.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you just use the other system?
Maybe your opinion would change if you had the pregnancy tester. Maybe then you'd be more of a fan of the...
Yeah,
it maybe. Makes me laugh. I bring it up every time I hear the one as well. I've got to mention the pregnancy. It's just so bizarre. It's up there with like the Game Boy fishing sonar and just things. And there's a few, I've talked to a few people on the podcast and just in real world about tuning applications for, you know, cars and things like
the
that.
The Vectrex had right. a tuning.
Really?
Yeah.
Right.
There's actually an auto tuning.
So how would you, what, just a cartridge that went into it that kind of hooked up to
plugged into the car or something?
Wow. So what year the Vectrex has got to be?
82, 81.
Right, right. Yeah. So maybe like an oxygen sensor that goes over the exhaust or something, or because everything was pretty rudimentary back then. And you could still car work back then.
Yeah, I think it was timing. It would do the timing from the maybe it plugged into the spark, where the spark plugs were or something. I have no idea. I've never seen it. I just know that that's one of the,
that's funny. Hey.
Yeah. The, and then, I mean the sewing machine Game Boy.
What?
Do you not know about the sewing machine?
No, I don't. I'm going to,
so there's a game.
I'm Googling while you speak.
Yeah. Okay. Singer made a sewing machine that connected to the Game Boy Color. They're really expensive if you try and get one.
Makes no sense at all. The Game Boy sewing machine is more than... I'm not going to read from Google, but I'm going to... Oh, my God, that's so bizarre. And this is like pre-Bluetooth, so I'm going to read about that later. That's kind of bizarre. So Kelsey Lewin... I see. So, of course, Kelsey's going to have something to do with knowing about that. She's a good egg. I really enjoy what she does. Anywho, that's for later. Yeah, I mean, there's just some of these, the way they kind of integrate. And then you sort of go, that's nuts. And you go, yeah, but now you can Google from your fridge.
Exactly. I mean, it's so you gotta put yourself in that time frame.
That's right. Is it nuts? There's a movie, I don't know if you're familiar with a movie called Time Bandits.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a kind of like on the end of the kind of, I guess, Monty Python thing. Is it Terry Gilliam was the
Terry Gilliam? Yeah.
Yeah. So he directed like Time Bandits. The one, The Meaning of Life. And there's a third one. And they're kind of like this weird, The Meaning of Life is the last one. And they're kind of this weird trilogy about life and stuff. But Brazil, correct. Correct. Yeah. So it's like Time Bandits, Meaning of Life, and then Brazil. And the Brazil is the very dystopian type one. It's actually a little bit spooky these days. But like in Time Bandits, it's all this kind of, and Brazil as well has that weird, like where they'll have like a teeny tiny CRT with a massive magnifying glass on a kind of a flexi arm thing. And
right.
It's like we've got that, and there's the technologies there, but it's just so rudimentary. But it's like, but that's, it works. And we look around at like fossil fuel cars and all this stuff that we're doing, and we're like, we're doing that. We're doing things a little bit half-assed for the sake of probably profit and just for the sake of it, you know.
Yeah.
And game machines and stuff have been similar in the same way. They've just kind of hung in there and tried things, and if it doesn't work, and I get a little bit annoyed about people that can't, like, for example, your friend that's going to unsubscribe from everybody that posts about the what's it called? The
play date.
That's like, it's all good and well, but at the same time, and even the N-Gage, at some point, there were a bunch of people that were really kind of putting a lot into it. And I guess when you become a parent, maybe, I don't want to sound like an old fart and I'm your Uncle Scott or whatever, but when you become a parent, you realize that there's still kind of like benefit in failure. and you have to find a way to sort of go, look, that's terrible, but I really appreciate the effort and time taken to make that. And the world seems to be forgetting about that, that we're not all super clever. And sometimes we think something's great and it turns out it's not. And we don't deserve to be canceled and totally kicked to the curb.
I think with, and you know, you see it with a lot of devices, it's somewhere it started out as a good idea. And then as they get down a line, they have to cut corners here and there.
Yeah.
And it's just, did they make it through?
Yeah,
with all those cuts and still came out with a good product.
Yeah.
Not that's, always.
That's probably when they went for some sort of investment and then got kind of like nudged left and right. And all of a sudden what was going to be a great thing is now so hamstrung and 10 frames per second. And, you know, a bunch of Nokia board members went, that's great, but it's got to be this and this. And it's like, you don't know what we're doing. Doesn't matter. We're paying the bills. Oh, Yeah. So sort of later in life, have you had much to do with consoles?
Yeah, I have. Well, right now I have a Switch, of course, which technically is, you know, the handheld console. And then I've got Xbox Series X, which I got lucky enough to get one without having to pay for these
exorbitant scammers. Scalper
prices.
But
that's... I think Microsoft has a good idea with their Game Pass where I don't even feel like I need to buy any games. And I know there's a lot of people that, you know, collecting physical cartridges is a big deal. And I kind of have gotten away from collecting physical cartridges. And I don't know whether it's a space reason or I don't know. It's something I've kind of gotten away from.
It's expensive.
Feeling like, well, it's expensive. And I've started to feel sometimes like I'm making money for the person who found it somewhere from something.
You're not
giving money towards anybody that created it.
No, that's right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I do have plenty of physical games. I say that, you know, it's, you know, it's just kind of a
I'm a big fan of like EverDrives and ROMs and stuff because A, it's obviously a lot cheaper for me, but B, the only person that's not getting my money is the one that's asking me to pay the price, which regardless of the market for me just seems ridiculous, and that's fine, but also I'm leaving that cartridge in the wild for someone that wants to complete their collection or insists on having the original, very original cartridge to for themselves. And I'm like, enjoy it. That's fine. I'm not going to snap one up and make it so you can't have it. That's
I had quite a lot of physical cartridges that I sold off just because it's even with the EverDrives, I find myself using that instead of going to the physical cartridge. And you know, I've got enough handhelds taking up too much space that I didn't need one more. I didn't want my room looking like a GameStop.
It actually amazes me how many people I've spoken to that have some incredibly valuable gear collections and it's not insured. And I guess it's just touch wood, nothing's happened to me, but it happens. You know, houses burn down or hurricanes come through or whatever, you know.
But how do you replace that? I mean, well,
I guess you don't, but I guess at the end of the day, if you lose it all, you can sort of start from scratch. And the other thing that astounds me is the amount of people I know that have bought and sold collections several times, just through different stages of their life.
Yeah.
That's a tough one to pay twice as much for like Conker's Bad Fur Day as you did like 15 years ago.
No, I've had systems that I've gotten rid of that I've had to rebuy at Game Boy Micro is a perfect example.
Right.
Those got marked down so much because they came out after the DS came out and nobody wanted them.
And weird and small.
You know, it was small. It didn't play Game Boy and Game Boy Color games. The DS was out. So it was the new thing. And now, good luck trying to get some of the Game Boy Micros that I had because the prices have just gone through the roof. I remember I briefly when I first started flying, I was doing Grand Canyon tours and making almost nothing. And I worked at a GameStop part-time. And we had a stack of about 15 Pokemon Game Boy Advances. Oh. No one wanted them.
Jeez.
They had them marked down to like $49. No one was buying them. Now, if I could have gone back then and bought all those.
That's funny, isn't it? That's funny. So with your these days, with sort of your YouTube, what's sort of the goal there? Is that just an extension of the Instagram? Which was the chicken and the egg?
So the YouTube came out afterwards, and I think 6 or 7 videos on there. And for me, I'm not a super great photographer, so I'm never going to get that kind of impact from a photo, but I do like doing videos. Mm. And I feel that's more sharing videos on Instagram is kind of a, someone sees it and then within a day or two, it's gone. It's forgotten.
Yeah. Yeah.
It moves. You know, YouTube. Yeah. I mean, it's Instagram is kind of a grind in that way where you just gotta, it's like every day you gotta keep putting out content versus YouTube. You put something up there, it's there forever. Plus interest in doing game streaming. And I actually had just kind of a weird viral event on my YouTube that I did a 3D print of the Stream Deck, a Steam Deck coming from
Steam.
And I think it's got like 30,000 views, and I had 100 subscribers at that point.
And what? That's weird.
It got picked up by a bunch of, I saw, you know, I got a bunch of notifications from different websites that had done it. And for some reason, I was the only person who had done a full 3D print and put it up. I didn't know it was going to be that way. Had I known that, I would have done
28,000 views.
Yeah. I would have done a better job on the video, but
that's crazy.
You know, it was the lowest effort post I've done on YouTube too.
So what do you think about the Steam Deck? Well, your video on your YouTube handheld obsession is 5 reasons to buy or not buy the Steam Deck. So can you narrow it down to 2 reasons to buy it and 2 reasons not to buy it?
I would say 2 reasons to buy it. I think at that price point, I know a lot of people want to compare it to the Switch, but if you start at that $350 price point, even if you bought it just to do RetroArch and just do all the older systems, it is going to blow the doors off of any RG 350, 351, whatever out there, because it's going to play. It should be able to theoretically play everything from about a PS3 down.
Right.
I mean, it's that in itself, just forget the whole Steam in library. That
just as a piece of hardware.
Right, yeah. For $350, that's worth it. Like, so that's one reason. And I know that's going to be something I'm going to do a lot with on it.
Yeah.
But I would say that's a great reason to get it. Another one is if you've got a Steam library already of games, it's a perfect way to play things handheld. But also if you wanted to use it inside your house with the Steam Link connected to your PC.
Right.
Like I know that's not talked about a lot, but
what is
most
that
times
in summary? So
basically you're streaming it from your PC to your handheld.
Kind of like a Wii U would work.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But it's gonna, you know, I mean, that in itself, I would say most of the time people play handhelds in their home. The Switch doesn't have a huge battery life, but you are going to be able to play a lot of those outside of it, but it's going to play it even better theoretically if you're playing it off a PC that you're already doing gaming on.
Yeah, right. But
I think it's I'm super excited. I get mine in December, something happens. But
you must have been one of the first 15 people or something.
I don't know how I got that. Like every time I try and buy anything, I get shut out. Like the analog pocket didn't even stand a chance on that one. But those are two good ones that I don't think a lot of people talk about. A lot of people look at it for gaming and based on what hardware is in it, it's going to play games great.
Will it play this game at 60 frames per second, crank it up? It's like, well, no. All right, well, it's junk. Well, it's not.
And speaking of that, one of the things that drives me crazy too, when you see a lot of reviews, is they just immediately want to go to frames per second.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's times when you'll play games and if you don't see that, frames per second, you're going to feel how it's playing, not focus on what that's saying. Because sometimes I don't know, you know, with frame skipping, things like that, it can be manipulated to look different than what you're actually doing. But
we're sort of getting back to like when the Jaguar was sort of in development, it's like 64-bit. And it's like, well, it's actually two 32-bit processors. So it's not 64-bit. And in actual fact, the way things were working at the time, and bit isn't the measurement of horsepower and overall performance.
Right.
And probably, even though I'm not a PC gamer, frames per second is starting to become a little bit of an obsessive kind of, like, even the clock speed of things is like, well, there's more to a car than just the engine or just the gearbox. So maybe,
With the Playdate, that was one of the things, you know, people were saying, you know, oh, look at this processor. It's only, I think it's 150 megahertz or something. It's something low, you know, but then the Game Boy was 8.
So the Playdate was like a 8-bit type thing, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, you know, you look at the, you can't numbers, you can't play specs because it just doesn't work to your advantage sometimes. And, you know, with everyone mad about but about the Switch not get being 4K and not being Nintendo has never upgraded anything
like step before one to the other. There's always three or four iterations
and they're never going to be the highest end.
That's right, it's not what they go device for
it. There is,
and they still sell the most of everything almost every time.
So
what are the two reasons not to buy a Steam Deck, in your opinion? The two, I guess, generally kind of like puntery type reasons.
So I would probably say the first one, if you've got a, really boils down to, are you going to use it enough as a handheld to make it make sense? I think the Steam library, for the most part, has a lot of games. If you're going to play specifically Steam library games, if you're not into shooters, you're going to lose out on a lot of what you have, because the other games that are more of your indie games, things like that, are offered on other devices that you may already have.
Well, sort of like platformers and things that just RPGs and things like that. Yeah.
I mean, they're going to be on other systems as well. So if you look at what their top games are from Steam, it's pretty much all first person shooters.
Okay.
So it's definitely, it depends on what you want from a game. If that's your type of game, then it's going to be up your alley. If it's not, it's going to be a waste, because you're probably not going to want to play a lot of the games that are on there.
Right.
I don't know. I can't think of another bad.
I think for me, we're looking at it like, everything for me, a lot of the time, it's about memory size, memory space, and 350 is a good start. But by the time you get to the big guy with all the fatness, I think it's more like about $600 US.
650.
That's about $1,000 in Australian colonial dollars. That's, and you're like, okay, it needs to be more than just a handheld now. And I have seen all the stuff about them docking it and using it basically as a PC, as a mobile PC, and also the concept of dual booting, so you can run the Steam OE, the Steam environment, and then you can dual boot into like the emulation stuff, like you were saying. So it's certainly, for that price, $1,000 Australian, to just get something off the shelf. And like you say, if you're big on Steam and you want to play whatever on the bus, because it's kind of what you do, then it's probably, again, it's outside the box. It's that sort of, and they're kind of not really, yes, there's a lot of hoo-ha, but the hoo-ha is mainly from the peanut gallery as opposed to the developer.
Yeah.
And yeah, it seems like that's, again, it's a little bit outside the box. It's not indie, but it's like, let's try this. So.
Yeah. I think they're also going to license it out. I think that's their big thing, is that you'll see they're trying to get like Alienware to make one, or HP would make one.
All right.
So it's going to be interesting to see how many these they actually sell. I mean, it's hard because you get all the hype from everybody online, but you know, getting actual sales numbers will be interesting to find out. And battery life is going to be what's going to make or break.
Oh, I think people need to accept it's just everything. The bigger it is, the thirstier it is. And if you're going to whinge about battery life, then I think you're kind of missing the point. Battery life these days is pretty great. I mean, you started with the Game Gear? Eight double A's every sort of 45 minutes or something stupid?
Six double A's. Well, that's, I call them my heavy sixers. I've got the Nomad, the Game Gear, the Atari Lynx, and the Turbo Express all just eat batteries like there's no tomorrow.
So shut up.
Yeah. So I have the Ioneo. And the 1X player. And if you're playing, it's an intense game. I mean, hour and a half, 2 hours, right, and you're done, you know?
Yeah. But still 2 hours of playing a game on a bus, you know, that you normally would only be able to play at a PC, you know, or an Xbox at home on your couch. So if you've got 2 hours of spare time, like to and from work, and then you got charged up each night, then it's still, the accessibility is still what I think people need to sort of focus on. But
we've got all these battery packs.
I'm just some crusty old dude that just appreciates the effort and everything. I mean, I've got recently picked up a Wii U, which I jailbroke, and I'm just running games and just going, oh my God, that looks amazing. Cause I don't own a Switch, but I own a PS4. You know, so for me, there's still a lot to be enjoyed. I'm not at the cutting edge. I'm not at the tip of the spear. I haven't owned a PC in a long time. I just recently bought like a new laptop, which is really more of an admin YouTube-y laptop. You know, it was like a $450 kind of secondhand ex-government lease laptop, a four-year-old i7 that just does what it's supposed to do. So for me, the world's very magical when it comes to consoles and stuff. I recently bought Ace Combat 7 for the PS4, and I've got VR. And then and that's like, because all I want is to fly a Tomcat. That's all I want to do in this whole game. It turns out I'm probably going to have to do a lot of work before I can have a Tomcat in the hangar, but maybe I'll persist. But it's just really cool just to be able to kind of go for a free flight around an island. And yeah, that's rad fun.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of VTOL.
Right.
I have an Oculus Quest 2 that I do the link into the computer, and that game is wonderful. It's probably one of the best flying games I've ever played. Must look
magical. And you're a pilot, so
yeah,
you've got some comparison. You've got some actual ground
flight
time to go. This actually isn't too bad. The physics feel good. It looks okay. Yes, it's a game, but I can still enjoy it.
And then Microsoft Flight Simulator just coming out on the Xbox now. And it's amazing that where consoles have gotten and how good that game looks too.
Yeah. It's sort of one of the only reasons why I would look into going down that path is because of the latest flight simulator. I used to fly a lot of RC aircraft, you know, flew a lot of like UAV type small drone stuff, but with sort of stuff that would fly for like an hour and a half, pretty big wingspan. Goggles with head tracking, you know, like the camera's on a bit of a pan tilt. So you kind of like my last aircraft I have, I just recently sold, was like a 2.4 meter glider, an ASW-28 with a folding prop. So, and I had like a variometer and stuff in it, back to the radio and all the information because of the flight controller. But I would sort of just pop up and use the variometer to catch thermals and fly for like an hour. And in the meantime, I'm kind of looking around and the experience of flying, but the loss is a few hundred dollars or $1,000 as opposed to crashing and dying. So to be able to now do that from my couch from an F-18 is a good step. It's a good step. And I look at that stuff and I'm like, some of my favorite RC aircraft were like the Fun Cub, which is kind of like a slightly caricatured sort of style aircraft with big bush wheels, you know, right. barn door flaps. You can bring this thing in nice and slow. And I've got a buddy, and he's like, he lives in Canada, and he's like, I just take my cub off and like go and land it in the street, and I fly everywhere. And it's the what they've done with the geography is so close that you can fly into LAX and have flown into LAX.
Yeah, I can tell you last night I actually was on Microsoft Flight Simulator and flew into San Francisco, which I've flown into countless times. I was actually based there for a while.
Right.
And it is, I mean, it's spot on. Some of the they do kind of a generic with some of the buildings,
because
I know there's things that aren't there that are supposed to be there, but that any person who didn't fly into there as much as I have wouldn't know.
Yeah.
You know, they wouldn't notice it, but
apparently there was a building somewhere in Australia, like in a suburb, that was like, it was like a million stories high or something. There was some weird geographic anomaly. They might have patched it out by now, but yeah, it was just like a random building in the middle of a suburb. It was just this sort of like sky lift thing to the moon that, they missed one little blip over the whole globe. They did pretty good, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, what's your sort of plan? I mean, do you still, I've spoken to a couple of content creators, and I don't really like to use the word, but I guess it gives someone an idea of what you're up to. And I kind of, you know, how does content creating affect how you enjoy your own gaming? So it's sort of like, I guess, a bit of a two-part query is like, do you still enjoy gaming for Sean? Can you still sit down and play? And kind of what's your kind of goal with the, with, you know, Instagram and YouTube? Is it something that you want to pursue and create a real sort of flavor of, or are you just, is it not really, let's see how it goes and it's fine if it doesn't or whatever?
No, I mean, I think a lot of times with my Instagram too, is I'll put out stuff that I like, that interests me.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I've always wanted to do it, because I still want to enjoy playing or enjoy doing things, even when it's not the thing that gets a lot of clicks. I love playing the Atari Lynx so much. I can't even explain to you.
Yeah.
It gets the weakest reactions online. Yeah. I try not to fall into the posting Pokemon, because that's always, you know, that's gold for getting likes, but if it's not what I'm doing at the time, then I'm not gonna post it. So
yeah.
I think that's the thing that you have to do, is you have to want to share the things that you like. And unfortunately, sometimes, you know, not everybody cares.
No, but there's a sincerity in it. And I think those that see that will go, okay, I really like this. Not just I'm liking it because, hey, I like Pokemon. Yeah.
Right.
And as I think you get a probably a more valid response reward kind of chemical reaction in your brain, knowing that that person, because especially if someone that you haven't seen before likes your stuff and you go look at their stuff and they're like, hey, he's got a PC Engine GT as well. Okay. It's my tribe. That's great.
Yeah. So it's doing that. I don't feel like I'm ever having to do something to get views or, you know, likes, things like that. So it's something that I want to do. And it's, you brought up that, my playing through every DMG game, which is kind of,
how's that going?
It kind of stopped because I started it with the reels and I realized that this is not, It doesn't work for that. Like I Instagram limits you to 30 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah.
To where YouTube Shorts or TikTok or anything like that, you can get a minute or more.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of rehashing it. And I think what I'm going to start doing on YouTube is I'm going to stream live while I play it for a set amount of time for each game, talk about it, decide then, because I think that's a little bit more engaging, and then make a shortened version of that as well.
Yeah.
But, and then do like 4 to 6 at a time, because making those individual ones. And I know, you know, it doesn't seem like much to do a 30 second, but to try and cram in everything you need to say into that 30 seconds and get all the video and
make it relevant there, and stuff.
It is a bit of a challenge on that. So
how are you actually playing those?
So I'm playing those through RetroArch.
Right.
And everybody always asks me that. They're like, how does this look like?
The screen looks great. It looks like you're just putting the real screen. I was sort of curious, like when you start doing multiples, like, well, you got to get your lighting set up and everything. You got to have that thing almost like locked in so it's not moving and stuff. But it looks legitly awesome, I must say.
It's been a – definitely I've gone through iterations on I did a countdown, top 50 countdown, right, where I would every day or so I would put out a countdown for the DMG games. And I used Mister for that, but it doesn't look as good.
Right.
So when you play it through RetroArch, there's one of their shaders has that where it looks like the actual handheld, but it's super demanding on your computer. I have a NVIDIA 3070.
Right.
And it actually looks better on the screen versus once I recorded it, it kind of compresses and loses a little bit, but it's the closest you can get to the best look and feel for how, if you were really playing the game, which is why I wanted to go with that. I tried recording the screen and it's really difficult.
How do you capture?
It can be done. Yeah. Trying to capture it.
Yeah. How are you capturing it? Just like basically a screen capture video, as opposed to feeding it out into something else and capturing like that.
Right.
Right. Yeah. You're asking your machine to do a lot of work.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing it twice kind of thing. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, you finished. Well, I don't want to say finished, but you've paused on number 22, Heianco Alien, which for anybody who hasn't played Heianco Alien, it's a really great little game. It is probably the predecessor to Pac-Man, some might say. It takes a little bit.
I was pretty excited to play that, because that was one that I never in a million years would have even played that if I would have seen it in a.
See, a little dude, you got to run around, dig holes so the aliens fall in, and then fill them back in. And if someone doesn't tell you that, I can tell you from personal experience, it takes a little while to work out what the hell you're supposed to do, apart from just run.
So that's what I did. I started playing the game without having looking at any instructions. I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. I've got several overdrives for all the Game Boys, and to just kind of like go through. I try not to keep too much on each overdrive, because otherwise it ends up just being this list of like, I don't know what I'm going to do here. But if you kind of pick it, it's like I might watch a video you do of like my 10 favorite or 10 gems or whatever. And I'm like, I'll just put those 10 on, put them in a folder on their own, and just kind of work through them. And it's really fun just to pick up a game and enjoy. Another game I love, which is random, I think you did it, was Quix, Quix.
Oh, yeah. I loved that in the arcade.
Oh, that would have been rad in the arcade. Yeah. It's weird. It's like a weird line. It almost looks like an old screensaver, an old Windows 98 or something. And you got to kind of like make the room it's in smaller and smaller and smaller, and it zaps you and stuff. So, yeah, right. So,
A resource that I use that, like, if I want to find games, because sometimes, especially on the Nintendo ones, you get those top 10, top 20.
Yeah, they're all sort of the same.
You know exactly what you're going to get. You're going to get the Mario games. Yeah. You're going to get
the Tetris
You're going to get, you know, there was nothing that surprised me on the top 50 that I did. So, but there's games out there that I've played that, you know, I've fallen in love with that weren't on there. So there's, I think the, it's called, V's. It's on, called V's Recommended Games. It's on Fandom.
Yeah.
And they've got every system, out there, and it breaks down best games on there. Some of them I don't agree with, but some of them I do, but it's a good starting point to look for stuff that isn't, you know, on that list.
Yeah. Yeah. So getting back to the YouTube, because I guess that's kind of like the whole goal of this is for people that might know of you to know a bit more about you, and those that don't know of you now know of you, and you know, which way do you want to direct them? And I guess what's your kind of elevator pitch for what A, your Instagram, and B, your YouTube is offering someone? For Instagram, for me, it's not really a hard choice, because if I just see stuff in my feed, like, I'm no loyalist to anybody. I have familiar faces and names now. But generally, if my feed just makes me feel happy because I'm seeing more Game Boys or more, I mean, the mountain bike, I see more bikes. And it's just kind of like I'm just plugging in for a little bit of endorphiny sort of stuff. But yeah, for you, what are you offering, I guess?
Well, I mean, when it comes down to what I've got out there, the one thing that I do pride myself on is the kind of, there's nothing I'm going to say no to handheld wise. I'm not narrowed into one area.
Yeah.
You know, I'll play everything handheld, from, you know, all these different Chinese consoles that come out all the time. I buy tons of basically junk that never makes it onto my Instagram or YouTube, just because for me, it's something I want to see. So there's actually recently I was looking around and bought these absolute junk systems, but they're
what do you got there?
It's a fan, okay, and it's a game system.
That's crazy. So I just sort of describe it. It's kind of like a little blue handheld with what, like maybe a 3-inch across LCD.
Yeah, it's got, you know, it's like Chinese.
It's almost like someone stuck a fan on the top of a LCD Game Boy.
Yeah. And there's multiple people who made them. I've got a couple different ones, and I just bought them up to take a look at them, maybe do post about them. If not, but it's, I'm kind of all over the place, but it's handheld related. I appreciate everyone's effort. Yeah. And, you know, I love to play too. Definitely not someone to follow for speed runs or, you know, best gameplay ever, you know, but it's. Yeah.
My speed run is like, how long will I last before I quit this game? That's how quickly can I get frustrated with this sort of thing? I'm the second worst gamer in the world by far.
I think the art
and stuff I get into.
The last thing I posted on Instagram was my, I did 100% on a game. It's the first time in I don't know how long that I've 100%
of a game. Because,
yeah, normally, you know, I'll just play a game, and when I finish it, or I get to the point where I don't feel like playing it anymore, that's the end of it. And I don't call myself a completionist, that's for sure. But for some reason, this one, I got it in my head, and then I got to a point where I couldn't not do it.
Right. What sort of game is Oceanhorn?
That's Oceanhorn Chronos Dungeon. That's it's part of Apple Arcade.
Oh, okay.
It is it's kind of like a hack and slash dungeon crawler.
Yeah.
And I think it was developed separately from, there's another game, Oceanhorn, which is an Oceanhorn 2, which are like Zelda, but not Zelda.
Right.
And I think they just use the name Oceanhorn. Right. I think that
same was world,
because it doesn't even remotely feel like the Oceanhorn or Oceanhorn 2. I just think it was something that they developed, but it feels like you're playing an NES game.
I knew 100% of it in 11 hours, 21 minutes and 10 seconds. That's a reasonable amount of time to give something.
It is. And you know, it's not some 100-hour game, but you know, there's definitely points. I definitely appreciate games that are, you know, a lot of people say, oh, something's too short. Like,
maybe
that amount of time is 10, 11 hours. You can
finish it and go play something else, I guess. So,
it's not that there isn't enough games out there to play, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I guess sometimes people really get invested in, you know, a story or a character. And like, I know for myself, the only time I've really experienced that is with sort of working through Metroid, playing like zero emission, because I couldn't do the NES or the SNES versions. I need maps and aids and walking frames and elevators and stuff. I kind of like, I exaggerate a bit, but I am at the point where if it becomes too hard too quick, I'm going to miss out, and I appreciate when it's made a bit easier for me. So playing like Zero Mission and then Samus Returns in the 3DS, like when I finished the 3DS version, I was both exhausted but a little bit sad that I had to kind of leave that chapter. Unfortunately, there's, you know, I'm starting Fusion, and then we've obviously got Dread coming and things like that. So, and all the Primes and all that sort of stuff. But yeah,
Fusion, that's my favorite of all the Metroids. Yeah.
Gets hard quick. Like, I just got to the bit where the reactor's kind of like full of plants and the fight off that bloody spider thing. And now I'm in a room with these Triffid looking flower things sucking me. And I'm like, you know what? I need to put this down for about a month and come back, because right now I'm just parked near the river at work. And if it's not careful, my window's gone down and this GBA is going skipping across the water. God, oh my gosh.
Well, you just throw the cartridge, not the game.
I'm not great. I'm not great with that kind of stuff. When I used to play a bit of tennis, I learned to put my racket down and then walk in circles really quick. And yeah. I went through a couple of rackets. That's fine.
Mm.
Yeah, right. So what's the... go on.
Oh, no. I was just going to say on the... there's always that argument of people who play games on the easier settings. And then,
oh, that's me.
You know, I mean, it's a game. Just that's my experience. Play what you want to play it on. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Like we're talking about Ace Combat. Like if you play on easy, you get like... you get unlimited gun ammo. You get whatever your kind of special weapon is. You might get a dozen of these sort of medium range missiles, but your normal missile is just endless ammo. You can fire them off in pairs, but it's like a two or 3 second recycle period. But it's effectively like 3D kind of what's the 3D afterburner? You're just letting rockets go.
Yeah.
Just locking under this. And so for me, I'm like, I just want to be a freaking pilot in a jet. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to fly into San Francisco today. I just want to take off and, I agree. I will always take an easy route unless it cuts out story or it kind of reduces character development or something. So, I guess you're just going to keep kind of enjoying what you enjoy. And anybody can come and join you on that journey, right?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, I share what I like, and you know, and sometimes you'll look at it and go, the heck's this guy talking about?
And if you get it, you get it. And yeah. I suppose the Steam Deck is down. You said December. Hopefully there isn't any kind of like chip shortage or whatever they'll blame it on.
Any kind of delay.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be. I think we all know that everything's got at least a 20% delay kind of count, you know, sort of counted into it. What have you got? That's a few months between now and December. What have you got planned to keep us all amused and entertained and educated?
Well, I have been playing a lot with the Ioneo and the 1X player. And
what's the Ioneo?
Ioneo is Windows Ryzen powered handheld.
Right.
And it's a little bit bigger than the Switch.
Yeah.
It's about the size of and weight of the Steam Deck. But it's quite a bit more expensive than even the higher price Steam Deck, but it's a beast of a handheld device, and I've been really enjoying that. And then if I ever get my displays all put back together, I posted one pic that I've got one shelf done, but I've still got quite a bit to go.
That's a nice pic though. There's a lot of really nice builds and collections of different Game Boys in there. It's pretty nice. You got all the where did you get all your bases from?
Your stands. So those all came from Rose Colored Gaming.
Yeah.
Not sponsored. Nice, hey?
Yeah, not sponsored. Just putting his kid through college.
Yeah, just helping him out. I bought quite a bit from him. But no, they're really nice stands. And so got to finish doing all that. And then I've got a couple videos for YouTube already filmed that I'm just putting the finishing touches on that I'll have out, but just going through and playing and getting back on with the DMG playthrough. So that's going to move over towards YouTube.
Cool. Be good to see how you sort of structure all that, because it is really good to see games in action and people's actual responses, especially for those people that do still buy cartridges. Some people just want to have them, some people want to play them. And I guess the beauty of the EverDrive is, like, I've taken my EverDrives of several consoles to share with other people, and they're like, I've always wanted to play blah blah, like, I want to buy it, but I don't want to pay $160 for a Toy Story on Mega Drive. Can we have a look at that? And I take it, and they're like,
there's a lot of those expensive ones that are
and they're expensive because they were probably terrible and most of them got binned and now they're rare. So it's really good to have that, but then some people that don't have access to an EverDrive or a friend with an EverDrive can kind of watch your videos and go, well, his honest response is, this is rewarding but frustrating and probably not worth the money, you know, or the opposite, not frustrating, super awesome, and definitely worth the $14 this game goes for. It's, people just don't notice it. So
yeah, there's a lot of games out there that are, you know, relatively inexpensive that are really great games that you know, not a lot of people care about because it's it doesn't fit into the, you know, if you want something that's Pokemon, Mario, Zelda, you're gonna pay through the nose. It seems like they're just, more and more of those games are getting just swiped up, and there's not enough out in the wild.
Nintendo must be pinching themselves just going, this is insane.
I tell you that the biggest mistake Nintendo's made, I think, is that they didn't come out with a Game Boy Classic.
Well, like, I think there's a lot of people in the community are glad they don't, because as soon as they do, it'll make things so much more. I mean, there's already people like getting stuff nabbed by customs and things like that. So as soon as that'll be half the reason why an FPGA, to develop an FPGA type Game Boy board would just cause so much drama, because the minute it's doing it, like, you look at stuff like, there was a Windows redo of Return of Samus that was in development for like 2 or 3 years. And there's no doubt that Nintendo was sitting back watching it. And it was literally the day it dropped, cease and desist.
Yeah.
And you're like, you let these poor dudes or ladies or whatever, these poor human beings put all this time in, knowing full well that they were on target, and they just kicked them in the nuts. Like, that's just mean. And I guess that's the sort of thing they do. Someone to develop hardware and then they just go, and
I don't think they'll be able to do anything with the analog pocket, but who knows? You know, I mean, that, if that ever comes out.
So what puts the analog pocket aside, you know, aside from all the other kind of handheld things that are coming out these days?
Well, that's the FPGA,
right?
It's definitely going to be the most accurate of the handhelds, being that it's FPGA. But, you know, I think the date now is October when Analog saying it's going to come out.
Right.
They pushed it back from May, and I caught some flack because I was complaining about it, and people were saying it's global pandemic, and I understand that, but I think
maybe
we're at almost a year, over a year, that people paid all their money up front.
Yeah. When does it become vaporware?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Oh, that looks pretty cool. I was just looking at it there. Yeah, right. Slick, super slick. Yeah.
Yeah, I won't lie. I wanted one, but I wasn't lucky enough. I think it sold out in like 5 seconds.
Really?
It's ridiculous.
I've got this, like, I bought one like 3-4 years ago. It's got like a little pie in it. Well, it's not a pie. It runs like Retro Orange or something. So it's a different type of board. It's a really nice little machine.
Oh, the orange pie.
Yeah, something like that. It's a really nice little machine. And but it came out with a terrible screen. Oh, it looks so dusty and stuff. What is it? Retro Stone.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it like when I got it, because I was all about emulation, like it's got four USB ports, a network port, and you know, charges, micro USB, and a HDMI out. So it's effectively like a mobile console. You know, the shoulder buttons on the back and all that sort of stuff. But the screen is just pretty terrible, unfortunately. And they just kind of missed the mark. But this dude must be kicking himself, because now they're everywhere. Everywhere. People are doing exactly that. And I guess they're just doing it better with... He only had to wait 18 months probably, and the new screen would have put him at that next level of people appreciating it.
Right. Yeah, the Odin is the most recent handheld. Right. Have you seen that one?
No. I stay away from stuff because, yeah, it's dangerous.
AYN and then Odin is the AIN Odin. It's an Android powered, which I think is the way to go with these. If you've got Android on them, because of there's already, you don't have to worry about developing software or having people make software. There's plenty of emulators available through the for Android. So it, it kind of takes out the need to worry about getting a bum.
I mean, you and I probably are both familiar with like using MAME on a PC and finding ROM sets and dip switches and everything through software is like, I'm doing this wrong. And it can be not wrong. It can just be a BIOS somewhere through that. Yeah, I went for a while. I got a couple of those like extendable kind of things that you Bluetooth to your phone. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the predecessor to what's going on now. But yeah, things like that. Odin looks pretty gnarly, actually.
Yeah, it's a nice looking. So hopefully it's a good one. We'll see.
We'll see.
I got the transparent purple one, and I think that may have been a mistake because it has LED backlighting around the analog sticks.
Yeah.
But that works on the ones that have the solid colors. Yeah. It looks on the transparent ones like it's not going to look as
bleed out a bit and be a bit more distracting. That one looks like it. You can get a nice little dock for it and everything as well too. So that's interesting. Oh, so many choices, and that's 2/3 of the problem, isn't it?
I mean, there's just so it feels like every week a new one's coming out. Not that that's ever a bad thing, I guess.
Well, if you love it, then you're in heaven. You're a pig in
exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, we'll be sort of going on an hour and a half there. It's really, really awesome to talk to you. It really is. And I kind of just, I will always encourage people to sort of, you know, go along and join in the journey with someone that's enjoying their journey. For me, that's probably key to who I would recommend. I always try and recommend someone that I follow or someone I think's doing some really neat stuff. And I'll give you the opportunity in a moment. Also, if you feel like this, sometimes people just say, look, follow who I follow and you'll meet some amazing people, or you just plug yourself because this is really about you. But for this particular episode, I'm going to recommend Lumberjack Mods on Instagram. This will be in the show notes. It's Lumberjack_mods. Just some really nice photography and a kind of like just a really individual, there's a lot of tartan. There's like photos of like a tartan color with an axe and just things like that. Just really cool, neat photography. And again, like I said to you before, I just like to see stuff in my feed that kind of makes me feel happy or makes me want to go and buy or do or build or mod or collect. This particular account does exactly that for me. So I would encourage anybody to go along if you don't already and take a checky outy and do a follow. And I'll give you the opportunity now if you like, because that's what it's about, kicking the can for others or yourself.
Well, one of my favorite ones that I follow on Instagram, and actually somebody I know from, he actually lived not too far from me in California, is Alf on Apple Pie.
Right. I'll get some of these details off you later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he takes some great pictures. He has a great collection. that he's always doing, does a little gameplay here and there. But if you like the flat lay art style, he has some really great pictures. And he's a really great guy. I know he's never in any of his stuff, but I've met him multiple times. We actually did some photo shoots together where I came down and he was doing his photos and I'd bring in some of my handhelds and that was early on in his Instagram. But he's definitely one of the, like I was saying before, I know I'm never going to be the professional photographer. His photos are beautiful. And also his, if you go to his, just his page, you can see he takes them all in an order to show up in the feed.
Right.
He's just a good one to follow.
Yeah. Cool.
And, of course, something we didn't even talk about, but Greg Farrell, which you've already,
Game Changer Mods. Yep.
Game Boy modding book that he made, I was the technical advisor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's if
you,
cool, man.
Do you have the book?
It's out in my bookshelf in the living room.
Yeah. If you open it up, I'm in the front section there as part of the book. So he's a great guy. I've known him as also for a while. So
OG.
Those are some two great ones.
Yeah.
And Sean Duran. He was doing esoteric mods, right. Sean.
Yeah.
But he's been working on a game that he's making, a true indie, which I think he's getting close to
as defined by us in the last 90 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think he's getting close to releasing it, but he's a really great guy. And Esoteric Games, I think, is the only one that he's currently using.
Right.
Esoteric Sean also might be in use. I'm not sure, but definitely Esoteric Games.
All right.
So those are my three. And of course me, you know.
Yeah, of course you. I mean, it's all about you. Handheld Obsession. Again, the links to both your Instagram and your YouTube will be in the show notes. I think it's just good to sort of see a lot of angles, you know, of what people are up to, and to see you cover from, you know, playing through DMG games right up to Steam Deck. Like I think it adds credit to someone's ability to kind of just look around and not just be, like you said, if it's not a Switch, I don't want to know about it. Or if it doesn't beat the Switch, it's junk. Which is just totally inaccurate and foolish to fall into that kind of that pit, because you're going to have to dig yourself out one day and enjoy whatever else is enjoying. All right, mate. Thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. And, thanks for joining me on a Saturday arvo after you had all that work to do too. So that's pretty great.
Yeah.
All right.
We're good talking to you.
Yeah. You too. I really, really do appreciate meeting you. It's always interesting to sort of see from, and I hope that other people, when they hear you, they kind of go, oh, okay, that's neat, you know, because I mean, when you got a bit of YouTube and people see your face, but like you said, a 12 second reel is nothing compared to a 90 second conversation about a person. Anybody that's listening now, if you enjoyed it, pass it on. Give it a like, give it a follow, all the things all the cool kids do. And there's plenty of other episodes that have been done and plenty more to come. So, mate, Sean, thank you for your time. And you have a great rest of your weekend. And you and I will be in touch, eh?
All right. Sounds good.
All right, buddy. Have a good one. Yeah, you too. All right.